Now it's time for Power of Prophecy, continuing the legacy of Tex Mars, exposing evil, and promoting Jesus Christ as Savior. Here's your host, Jerry Barrett.
Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. I'm your host, Jerry Barrett. Honored to have you join me again this week. I have a special guest in studio this week, and this is a very sensitive subject for my guest. We're going to be covering animal testing, a barbaric practice in modern medicine. But it's more encompassing than just modern medicine. Of course, Big Pharma is involved, but there is also Big Ag, Big Business, all of the elite big money players, and this is a heinous activity that needs to be exposed. Now, before I bring on our guest today, I want to start this program with Genesis, chapter 1. Verse 1, in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth. Verse 11, and God said, let the earth bring forth grass, the herb yielding seed, and the fruit tree yielding fruit after his kind, whose seed is in itself upon the earth, and so it was. We go to 14, and God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years. Verse 20. And God said, let the waters bring forth abundantly the moving creature that hath life, and fowl that may fly above the earth in the open firmament of heaven. 21. And God created great whales and every living creature that moveth, which the waters brought forth abundantly after their kind, and every winged fowl after his kind, and God saw that it was good. Verse 22, and God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters in the seas, and let fowl multiply in the earth. 24, and God said, let the earth bring forth the living creature after his kind, cattle and creeping thing, and beast of the earth after his kind, and it was so. Verse 25, and God made the beast of the earth after his kind, and cattle after their kind, and everything that creepeth upon the earth after his kind. And God saw that it was good. 26, and God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. Verse 27 says, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And verse 28, and God blessed them. And God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply, and replenish the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. We are to have dominion over everything on this earth. Doesn't mean we are to abuse it. It means that we are to be good stewards. And we read Proverbs 12, verse 10. A righteous man regardeth the life of his beast, but the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel. My guest today is my lovely wife, Leslie. She is an animal lover beyond anything you can imagine. We've had guinea pigs, lovebirds, parakeets, parrots, horses, dogs, donkeys, and if she could, we'd have a zoo on the Lazy Bee Ranch. Leslie, welcome to Power of Prophecy.
Thank you, Jerry. It's good to be here.
Now, this is going to be an emotional program because this topic is near and dear to Leslie's heart. And if you recall, she's the one that spurred me to do a program on all of the chemicals that are in products that we use every day. And I gave you some of the apps that she uses when we go shopping. And we have removed as many of the toxins from our household as possible. But this topic, how did you become so aware of this problem of animal testing?
I was watching videos on Facebook when I came across a post about Ridgeland Ranch Beagles. And as you know, Jerry, Beagles are my favorite dog breed. So, of course, I watched it. But I was absolutely horrified by what I saw. I had no clue dogs were used for research.
I can affirm one of her birthday gifts that I got her was a beagle.
Yes, Toby.
We named him Toby. And Toby was what they called a patch beagle. He was white with brown spots, black spots. He was ornery to the core, but he adored my wife. So I knew when she mentioned Ridgeland Farms and all the beagles, I knew this was going to be a tough subject. But what is Ridgeland Farms?
Ridgeland Farms Incorporated is a USDA Class A dog breeder, as well as a USDA licensed Class R research facility. They're based in the town of Blue Mounds in southwestern Dane County, Wisconsin. They have been in operation since 1966. They are the second largest commercial breeder supplying beagles to research laboratories in the United States, as well as being a biomedical research facility. I found an article or a webpage called SaveTheDogs.io, and this is a great website to visit. It not only gives you information about Ridgeland Farms, but it also talks about the largest breeder that's located in New York, and we'll talk about that one later.
Okay, so why would they specifically pick beagles to breed and to, I guess, test on?
Beagles are the most commonly used dogs to breed for laboratory research. And they're chosen for a combination of reasons. One, their size, but mainly because of their temperament and physiological similarities to humans. Beagles typically weigh between 20 and 30 pounds. Beagles are notably docile and tolerant of handling by unfamiliar people. Ridgeland Farms, unfortunately, breeds 3 to 4,000 beagle puppies per year.
Okay, so you said physiological similarities, but as we will discover, these are not apples to apples when they're doing these tests.
No, not even close.
We need to keep that in mind. And I know some of you are thinking, well, we still have pigs and we have primates and we have the physiological, and I'm, because of this topic, I have done research on top of what Leslie has done to try to understand better how this animal testing really is not apples to apples when they're doing these tests. Okay, so keep that in mind as we go through this program. So Ridgeland Farms, they are a puppy mill. They are breeding these dogs for one purpose only, and that's to abuse. But what are the living conditions for these dogs inside Ridgeland Farms like?
Well, I found my information on SaveTheDogs.io, and it's pretty horrific. And this is what I found. They live in wire cages stacked too high that measures approximately 2 feet by 4 feet, with anywhere between 2 to 4 beagles in each cage. The wire flooring causes chronic foot infections, cysts, and the inability to walk. Some dogs develop untreated injuries that worsen over the years. Some can't even lie down comfortably or walk without pain. The nauseating conditions from accumulated feces and urine. And if you go to Save the Dogs, you can see videos, and it's absolutely horrific. But the facility can hold approximately 3,200 dogs. These poor dogs have no beds, no comfort, and no love. And dogs only leave their cages when they're being tested on. They never go outside. They never see the sun. They lack adequate veterinary care, unnecessary euthanasia for business reasons. Puppies as young as 27 days old get sold for research. Workers cut the vocal cords of 30 to 40 dogs per month using a paralytic agent with no anesthesia. The dogs were fully conscious, purely for human convenience, so they don't have to listen to them bark. Dying puppies are thrown in trash bags.
We're going to play a number of videos. This one is from Scott Gilbertson, who went undercover to investigate Ridgeland Farms. In a video, Scott recalled his job interview. You got to listen to what he has to say here.
Some pretty horrible stuff was said right away. He had said, if you saw a pile of dead dogs, you know, would that bother you?
Would it bother you? That's it. We're supposed to be good stewards over this earth. And that is not being a good steward. You know, we know the Bible says that the love of money is the root of all evil. Why would you breed 3,000 to 4,000 dogs and sell them to these monsters other than the love of money? There is another video where Scott speaks to a crowd of supporters after he has exposed Ridgeland Farms, and he testified about the conditions. This is Scott once again.
Now, some of you may know, a few years ago, I got a job at Ridgeland Farms. I wanted to see if anything had been done since the 2017 investigation and the lack of response from law enforcement. I was inside for months watching what happens to these dogs. And what I saw is something no animal should ever have to endure. These are not well cared for research animals, like Ridgeland claims. They are innocent living beings confined, used, and discarded. I watched dogs endure procedures that would outrage anyone if they saw it with their own eyes. Ridgeland can say whatever they want, but I was there. I documented it. I testified about it. And the truth doesn't change simply because it's devastating to their company.
In sworn testimony from the October 2024 evidentiary hearing and Judge Lanford's January 2025 order, quote, the court finds probable cause that Ridgeland committed a felony violation of the animal cruelty statute by having caused unnecessary and excessive pain or suffering by mutilating dogs' eye glands and vocal flaps, unquote. The dogs would be thrashing around in pain, often yelping, crying out. Then we just put them back in the cage. Unquote. Scott Gilbertson, former Ridgeland employee. The dogs at Ridgeland were extremely stressed to the point where they were behaving in a very abnormal way. The manic barking and spinning were off scale, way beyond anything I've ever seen in what I can consider to be a normal dog. End of quote. Professor Mark Beckoff, animal behavioralist, testimony after thousands of hours of observing dogs. Quote, the ammonia odor level in several locations within Ridgeland buildings was bad enough that I experienced nausea on one occasion and my throat and nostrils were irritated for several hours after I left the facility. End of quote. That was from DATCP State Inspector. Inspection report, July 6, 2022, cited in court order.
So there is evidence that we have abused these animals, but they still continued business as usual. they're breeding dogs, they're selling dogs. This is why I read Genesis, because we have dominion. But we are supposed to take care of and maintain, not destroy. This is heinous. So what types of research do they do on these beagles?
At Ridgeland Farms, they force feed the dogs toxic chemicals. They load their bodies with disease-ridden ticks. Then they kill them, then harvest their organs. And they also test pharmaceuticals and do medical procedures on them.
So while they're doing this heinous activity to these poor dogs, do they have a veterinarian on site?
Yes. However, Richard Van Domlin, facility manager of Ridgeland Farms, is now suspended from practicing veterinary medicine and is fighting 311 allegations of delegating hundreds of so-called cherry eye surgeries to employees who have no veterinary license. Two employees testified last fall to participating in the bloody surgeries, saying they used no anesthesia and little to no pain meds.
Okay, so they're treating them for cherry eye, but what is cherry eye and what causes it?
Cherry eye is due to poor breeding practices and inadequate vet care, which can lead to the prolapse of the third eyelid gland. It's also hereditary. And this is from Matthew Reich, former Ridgeland employee from 2006-2010, sworn testimony from the October 2024 hearing. Quote, the dog's eyes would bleed profusely for several minutes. Sometimes it would start pouring onto my hand before I even let go of the dog. Unquote.
So, Scott Gilbertson, he's referenced once again. He talked in an interview that was on YouTube about this practice of cherry eye treatment.
She told me that there's going to be a lot of blood. She told me just hold them as tight as you can. They're going to be, you know, trying to thrash around. I didn't exactly know what the procedure was, but she took the scissors and she cut the inflamed part, the cherry eye. She just took a scissors straight to it and snipped it, and blood just started going everywhere. And then we just put the dog back into the cage, you know, no anesthesia, no anything. Even with the earmuffs on, the heavy-duty protection, you could hear the screaming. When we put them back in the cage, there'd still be bleeding, and the dogs would just be, like, licking their face, and they'd just be, like, overwhelmed. And, you know, they're going through all the pain, and then they're just completely overwhelmed.
Wow.
That just makes me sick.
Yeah, that's horrible. That's pretty explicit on how, I mean, he said that we had earmuffs to try to drown out the yelping and the crying and the screaming and the pain. And then as soon as they cut this with scissors, they just threw them back in the kennel, back in the cage. That's horrendous. So, what companies, now Ridgeland isn't the only one doing testing on these dogs. They're breeding them, but they're also doing some testing, but they're selling them to other testers, I guess, right?
Yes. And for the complete list of the people who buy from Ridgeland Farms, you can go to riseforanimals.io. And here are just a few of the universities, which I don't know about you, Jerry, but I didn't know universities tested on dogs or animals. I guess that shows my ignorance, but I just didn't know. And other companies that have purchased beagles from Ridgeland Farms. And like I said, this is just a few of them. University of Chicago, Washington University, Texas A&M, Auburn University, Kansas State University, Iowa State University, Merck Animal Health, Southwestern Research Institute, the Mayo Clinic, LabCorp Early Drug Development, and LabCorp.
So it's prevalent all over. You know, I knew that there was some testing going on, but I had no idea the fact they were getting all of these animals from basically a puppy mill. I have a clip here of Michigan State Senator Dana Polhanke, and she was questioning the Wayne State University's senior director of the Division of Laboratory Animal Resources and former Charles Rivers Labs veterinarian Michael Bradley. Listen to this question and testimony.
What percent of dogs in the Wayne State experiment are beagles? Because I'm just seeing a beagle on the floor here, by the way.
We haven't had beagles since I've been here.
Is it just any breed of dog?
It's like what they call a mongrel hound. It's a specific breed that's bred in research.
A mongrel hound. Okay.
Yeah, it looks like a hunting dog, like a tall hunting dog appearance.
Are the tall hunting dogs caged alone?
No. Well, depends. At times we pair house and at times we house in adjacent cages where they see each other, but they're not together directly.
Do they ever go outdoors?
They do not.
What's the average lifespan of one of the hunting dog types in your experiment?
Is it
6 months? Is it 1 year? Is it 3 years?
The typical course of the experiment is roughly 1 year. Sometimes it ends up being shorter than that. Sometimes
what happens after 1 year?
As the study is designed, the animals are euthanized at the end.
Have any of the dogs been adopted out or able to be adopted out as per Teddy's Law?
There have not been dogs adopted out. Since that time, there have not been dogs that were deemed adoptable according to our determination.
Okay, so the animals are 1 year and then they're euthanized.
Wow. So these animals are born, they're sold, and universities and other companies are testing on them for a year or less. They never see outdoors. They never get anything but abused. And this is according to Michael Bradley from Wayne State University. There was also a YouTube report that was provided by CBN News on the Veterans Affairs use of dogs for medical research. This is Anthony Bellotti, the founder of White Coat Waste, which targets taxpayer-funded research on animals. Listen to Anthony.
We're talking about tests like taking six-month-old puppies, putting them on treadmills, forcing them to run exhausted dogs, inducing heart attacks, sloppy and botched surgeries, restraint devices, drilling holes in their skulls, destroying their brains, and charging taxpayers for it. We know it's at least $15 billion a year in taxpayer funding. So we're not talking about pharmaceutical companies here. We're not talking about cosmetics testing here. We're not talking about private industry here. We're talking about government spending here. They spend far more. The USDA, EPA, NIH, DOD, and Department of Veterans Affairs than the entire private sector does combined.
That's our taxpayer dollars. I hope you're as disgusted as I am listening to these testimonies and these reports. It's so disheartening that we have become so enamored over the almighty dollar on how to sell a product that we have lost our humanity. This is a clip from Todd Wiesner. He works at the VA office. He actually served in the Iraq War, and this is his statement.
What do they pay for a research dog compared to how many, you know, therapy dogs could you buy for veterans that are in danger of hurting themselves or need a therapy dog?
So we're spending all this money to kill these animals instead of training them to be therapy dogs. This is such a sad state of affairs. Now, we're coming up to the halftime break, but before we do, I need to ask you, Leslie, what is the future for Ridgeland Farms?
In April 2026, Big Dog Ranch Rescue, or BDRR, and the Center for the Humane Economy reached an agreement with Ridgeland Farms to remove approximately 1,500 beagles from the facility and place them on a path towards safety, care, and adoption. Lori Simmons, CEO, President, and founder of Big Dog Ranch Rescue, announced.
I'm Lori Simmons, CEO, and founder of Big Dog Ranch Rescue. The Richland Beagles captured the nation's heart. When we launched this rescue mission, I made you all a promise. We would not stop until every single beagle was out and safe. We would not leave one dog behind. Today, we have honored that promise to you. This marks a historic victory for the dogs of Richland Farms. Big Dog Ranch Rescue has secured a binding legal agreement for the permanent closure of Richland Farms and the transfer of all of the remaining beagles to our custody. A mission that began on April 29th and has now ended in total victory for these dogs. At its core, this story is about resilience, compassion, and the transformative power of giving animals the chance to experience love, safety, and a normal life for the very first time.
So, Big Dog Ranch Rescue, BDRR. There is a gentleman named Wayne Pussell, and he gives us a timeline of what happened during this process to rescue these beagles and to shut down Ridgeland Farms.
Let me review the timeline that brought us here. Last October, the Center for Humane Economy joined a coalition with Dane for Dogs, PETA, The Simple Heart, Rise for Animals, and others to convince a court-appointed special prosecutor to take action against Ridgeland Farms. Later that month, Special Prosecutor Tim Grunke and Ridgeland Farms reached a plea agreement requiring the facility to surrender its commercial dog breeding and seller's license by July 1, 2026, in lieu of facing criminal animal cruelty charges. In February, the Center for Humane Economy opened a private discussion with counsel for Ridgeland Farms about acquiring its dogs. With our group recognizing that the company's business model was no longer viable and there was an opportunity to get the dogs before they sold them to contract labs and universities in a fire sale. In March, Wayne Shung led a protest at Ridgeland Farms, attracting advocates from Wisconsin and all across the U.S. The scale of the protest was quite extraordinary. In April, Big Dog Ranch Rescue entered the private discussions we initiated with Ridgeland about taking the dogs. As those discussions proceeded, Wayne Shung led an even larger, higher-profile protest at Ridgeland Farms, attracting enormous attention to the issue. In the waning days of April, the Center for Humane Economy and BDRR signed a confidential agreement with Ridgeland Farms to purchase 1,500 dogs. BDRR took certain dogs, and we, with the assistance of Beagle Freedom Project, the Wisconsin Puppy Mill Project, Dane County Humane Society, rescued the rest. On June 1st, with so many people rightly asking about the remaining dogs, the Center for Humane Economy and BDRR purchased another 135 dogs. On June 2nd, 2026, Ridgeland's counsel reached out to the center's attorney and proposed a sale of the remaining 475 dogs. 325 now and 150 later this summer, dogs were part of an existing testing protocol by Ridgeland. It appears now that BDRR is now going to take these dogs, perhaps because it offered more money for them than we did. But in terms of Ridgeland and its commercial sale of dogs, end of July should be it. And all I can say to that is hallelujah. This is so extraordinary. 2,100 dogs moved from Ridgeland into safe hands.
That's amazing. 2,100 dogs that have been abused are being introduced to foster homes and will eventually be adopted out. Well, we've come to the end of the first half. My guest today is my beautiful bride, Leslie Barrett. We are discussing animal testing. We want to thank you for giving us some of your time. We have to take this pause, but when we come back, we're going to dive right back in. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. Stay with us, won't you? We'll be right back. Hello, friends. Jerry Barrett back with you again. I want to thank all of you who have cheerfully donated to help us reprint books. And we could use your help. We have a couple more we need to reprint, and we'll be talking about those in the near future. For those who have been able to send gifts to help us offset the cost of all this printing, Sandra and I are really, really thankful for your help. If you can do more, we would greatly appreciate it. There will be a button to push right there on the main page at powerofprophecy.com. Just select whatever you can help us with. You can phone your donation to the ministry at 1-800-234-9673, or you can send in a check, money order, or cash to us here in Spicewood. Okay, and now let's return to our regular program. My guest today is Leslie Barrett. Leslie, welcome to Power of Prophecy.
Thank you for having me.
So we finished the first half talking about Ridgeland Farms, but are they the only facility that breeds dogs for research?
No. According to Rise for Animals, Marshall Bio Resources, also known as Marshall Farms, they confine approximately 23,000 dogs inside its shed on any given day. Per March 2024 inspection reports compiled by the USDA Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, Marshall was documented holding 66,421 animals, including 7,280 puppies, 15,076 adult dogs, 41,609 ferrets, 1,886 pigs, 127 kittens, and 443 adult cats. And Marshall Bioresources has had 20 violations of the Federal Animal Welfare Act. I just want to note that companies are buying these dogs at $1,000 per dog.
There we go. That's the love of money being the root of all evil.
Yes.
Now, Wayne Purcell, we heard from him about the timeline for closing Ridgeland Farms, but he also had this to say about Marshall Bioresources.
We must pivot away from Ridgeland and toward Marshall Bioresources, which has 10 times the number of dogs that Ridgeland had. Our campaign must focus on the purchasers, whether it's Merck or some other pharmaceutical company. This use of dogs supplied by these breeding facilities must stop. Our campaign also must focus on the National Institutes of Health, the largest grant maker for biomedical research in the world. They spend billions of dollars funding research grants involving dogs, cats, primates, and more broadly, the pharmaceutical industry must make the transition away from animal testing. When we passed the FDA Modernization Act 2.0 in 2022, we lifted the animal testing mandate for experimental drugs in the U.S. Now, with us poised to pass the FDA Modernization Act 3.0, there's no excuse for the pharma companies to continue to use these animals any longer. We have a broken drug development system.
There is a broken drug development system, but he mentions the National Institute of Health, NIH. If you recall, Anthony Fauci from the NIAID, our COVID czar, the criminal, the monster, he gave tons of grants. I mean, billions of dollars, with a B, billions of dollars, with no care what happens to these animals. It's just heinous. Now, here is a clip that was on YouTube that was produced by Rise for Animals, and they had this to say about Marshall.
It's one of the largest dog breeders for the animal experimentation industry in the United States. 23,000 dogs held captive. Also cats, mini pigs, guinea pigs, mice, and ferrets. This is Marshall Bioresources, breeding animals for torture in laboratory experiments around the world. Private companies that force animals to ingest chemicals like pesticides to test toxicity. Universities that sever dog spinal nerves, cut off their tails, and implant electrodes on their bladders. It's part of an $18 billion industry that works hard to hide its abuse from you, erasing any trace of these animals, because if you know, you will care.
if you know you'll care is a fact, which is the main reason that we are doing this program today.
The profits don't stop there with the animals, though, that are bred and sold in the laboratories. Marshall Bioresources also owns Marshall Pet Products that are sold in pet stores. So if you go to a pet store, and it's mainly toys and products for ferrets, but they also do that. So
anything to make a buck.
Yes.
It's so sad. Are there laws on the book that will protect these animals from research?
This is what Animal Legal Defense Fund had to say. Quote, under the Animal Welfare Act, dogs can be kept in enclosures only 6 inches larger than their bodies, having just enough room to spin in circles inside their cage meets the current requirements for exercise. This is because federal regulations focus primarily on physical needs, including providing food, water, and shelter, while failing to account for animals' social and psychological needs and the suffering caused by confinement, isolation, and deprivation. The USDA does not track the millions of mice, rats, birds, fish, and farmed animals used in agricultural research, which make up 95 to 98% of the animals confined in laboratories. Researchers estimate that there are more than 100 million, yes, that's correct, 100 million of them suffering in laboratories with no legal protection. So what this means is they can do whatever they want to those animals without any repercussion. It's absolutely sickening and heartbreaking. In 2025, 31% of protected animals were used in studies that intentionally caused physical pain and distress, some of which was purposefully not alleviated. These numbers don't reflect the psychological suffering caused by confinement, social isolation, and an inability to engage in natural social interactions with other members of their species. Decades of research show that laboratory confinement can cause abnormal behaviors, anxiety, depression-like symptoms, and self-injury, particularly in highly social species such as dogs and primates. Close quote. Jerry, did you know there aren't nearly enough inspectors to properly inspect research facilities? Most inspectors aren't empowered to do anything consequential about violations. Many labs pass inspection even where appalling legal violations occur. Alternatives to animal testing are more effective, more reliable, and more humane.
So what animals are generally used for the research here in America?
I found an article by the Vet Desk titled 20 Animal Testing Statistics You Need to Know in 2026 by Elizabeth Gray. Quote, an estimated 100 million animals are used in experiments each year in the United States. The U.S. conducts 53% of research on rabbits, hamsters, and guinea pigs. The National Institute of Health owns over 7,000 monkeys used for research. The National Institute of Health spends an estimated $14.5 billion, I repeat, $14.5 billion taxpayer dollars on animal testing each year. Between 85 to 95% of research animals are not protected by law, so they can do anything they want to these poor babies. Pigs are used for biomedical and agriculture research. They are also used for surgical procedures. They're used as models for training surgeons in various medical procedures and complex surgeries. While the animals are supposed to be unconscious, During the procedures, pigs are known to be difficult to intubate and maintain under anesthesia. So they're not only operating on healthy animals, they're doing it without anesthesia. The top three countries for testing animals are the United States, China, and Japan. And Japan leads in animal testing, which surprised me. I thought it would have been China, but Japan was. But we're right there in the top three.
Yeah. So how much does our federal government spend each year to support this kind of research?
In an article from Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, I found this, quote, the federal government spends more than $20 billion, that's with a B, per year to support research on more than 775,000 animals. That does not count mice and rats. According to data from the USDA, more than 16,000 dogs and cats, nearly one-third, are subjected to pain or distress.
Wow. That's heavy numbers. Now, I'm going to read this article that Leslie found in Science Insights. It was published March 5, 2026, because this, as you can tell from the emotion in her voice, this one tears her up. So in this article, it says, quote, animal testing involves exposing live animals to chemicals, ingredients, or finished products to measure safety before those products reach humans. The methods range from applying a substance to an animal's skin or eyes, watching for irritation, to feeding animals increasing doses of a chemical to find out the amount that becomes lethal. These tests are used across industries including pharmaceuticals, pesticides, industrial chemicals, and in some countries, cosmetics. A lot of brands that test on animals do so by allowing third parties in mainland China to test their finished products on animals. One of the most well-known animal tests is the Dray's test, developed in the 1940s and still used today. It measures how irritating a substance is to skin or eyes. New Zealand white rabbits are the standard species for this test because of their large eyes, which make observation easier, and because they're relatively inexpensive. In the eye test, a small amount of the substance is placed directly onto the cornea and inner eyelid of one eye of a conscious, restrained rabbit. They don't treat the other eye because they want to compare the two. The rabbit is not given anesthesia. Researchers check for redness, swelling, cloudiness, bleeding, discharge at intervals of 1, 2, 24, 48, and 72 hours after this exposure. Sometimes they go up to 21 days. Each sign of damage to the cornea, iris, and surrounding tissue is scored on a numerical scale with a maximum possible score of 110. Up to 6 rabbits may be used per substance, though testing stops at 3 if severe damage occurs early. The skin version follows similar logic. A substance is applied to a shaved patch of skin, and researchers score the resulting redness, swelling, and tissue damage over several days. Acute toxicity tests determine how much of a substance it takes to cause serious harm or death. The most recognized version is the LD50 test, which stands for lethal dose 50%, the dose that kills half the test animals. While older versions of this test used large groups of animals, the current method approved by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development uses fewer. In the updated procedure, animals, typically rats, are fasted and then given a single oral dose of a substance, usually through a tube inserted into the stomach. A single animal is dosed first at a level estimated to be near the lethal threshold. If it survives, the next animal receives a higher dose. If it dies, the next one receives a lower one. Animals are dosed one at a time, usually 48 hours apart, and observed closely for the first 4 hours, then daily for 14 days total. At the end of the study, the animals are killed and examined internally for organ damage. The lethal dose is then calculated statistically. Rabbits are the default species for skin and eye irritation studies. Rats and mice dominate toxicity, cancer, and chronic exposure research. Dogs, particularly beagles, are used in longer-term repeated dose studies. Non-human primates are reserved primarily for pharmaceutical development. A typical development program for an antibody-based drug uses around 144 non-human primates across all required safety studies. Close quote. Also in an article from Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine is this, quote, through public records requests, the Physicians Committee obtained records from 26 public veterinary schools across the U.S. and Canada and found that hundreds of courses use animals who are killed before, during, or after the training exercises. This is what our vets are trained with. Almost every public vet school does this. This story continues. Quote, many vet schools kill animals, including horses, cows, and pigs, in what are often called terminal exercises. One school bought live chickens so vet students could, among other things, break the conscious animals' necks. Also, while more rare, some schools purchase dogs and cats for use in these courses. Close quote.
Please, please take action. Please help by urging vet schools to stop killing animals and acquiring cadavers from ethically questionable sources. Tell them, don't kill one to save the other.
No kidding. So, are there alternatives to animal testing?
Some common alternatives to animal testing include computer modeling and testing on laboratory-grown cells instead of living species. Scientists can grow test cells from samples taken from human cheek swabs. This type of testing is often more accurate when testing human drugs and disease because animal test subjects are very different biologically than humans.
And this is one thing that I learned by watching some of these videos that Leslie had sent to me. There is a podcast called The Animal Reader. And Dr. Jared Bailey, the Director of Medical Research for the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, was interviewed on this program, and he had some very interesting things. If you recall at the beginning, I said this is not apples to apples measurements because animals physiologically do not mimic 100% what humans are, which is why the alternative methods Leslie mentioned are so important. He said today, if they had done animal testing for aspirin, it would kill the animal and aspirin would have never made it onto the market. Because physiologically, we are still different. There are still differences in our DNA strands that cause animals to react differently than us. And this is vitally important. Now, in this podcast, Dr. Bailey was asked, is animal testing useful? Listen to his response.
I used to think it was a necessary evil, but as I progressed through my scientific career as a researcher, I started to question the scientific necessity of using animals, whether it was helpful or not, necessary, whether doing something on a rat or a mouse or a dog or a monkey could actually be reliably predictive for humans. And the more I looked and the more I found out, the more I realized that wasn't the case. More than 90% of drugs, new drugs that look safe and effective in animal testing, then go on to fail in human clinical trials. And even many of those that get through and get marketed, then go on to have warnings placed on them because of adverse effects. Or are withdrawn from the market, again, because of safety issues not seen in animal testing. There are better things we can do in science to do what we need to do to find out what we need to find out.
Wow. So is there a way for us to find out what companies test on animals?
Oh, that is such a good question, Jerry. Yes, there are. The two best websites to use to find out which companies test on animals are leapingbunny.org. Let me say that again because this is the best one. Leapingbunny.org and PETA cruelty-free certification. They both have a list of companies that test on animals and a list of companies that don't test on animals. But be very careful because there is no standard or legal definition for the term cruelty-free brands. Brands can call themselves and their products cruelty-free, and it can mean whatever they want it to mean. This is why you must look beyond the label and fact-check a brand's cruelty-free claims to ensure no animal testing occurs at any stage of manufacturing or anywhere in the world. Also, some brands have carefully worded their animal testing policy to make it sound like they're cruelty-free, when in fact they aren't. For example, claims like, we don't test on animals, but we're paying and allowing others to do so on our behalf. And companies will put a bunny on their product, hoping you, the consumer, will not know the difference. So please make sure you know what the PETA and leaping bunny symbols look like.
Okay, I'm going to give that to you one more time. Leapingbunny.org. LeapingBunny.org.
I have a cruelty-free checklist that Leaping Bunny put out. None of the brand products are tested on animals. The brand can ensure none of its ingredient suppliers and manufacturers test on animals, and they verify this with documents or certifications. The brand does not allow or ask a third party to test its ingredients, formulations, or finished products on animals on its behalf. The brand does not allow its products or ingredients to be tested on animals when required by law. And the brand does not sell its cosmetics in China under current conditions that may trigger animal tests. Brands must not be willing to allow the Chinese government to test their products or ingredients on animals. And the difference between Leaping Bunny and PETA are as follows. Both PETA and Leaping Bunny verifies companies does not test its products or ingredients on animals. However, Leaping Bunny is the only one that requires documents from suppliers to ensure compliance. Only Leaping Bunny conducts independent audits. Only Leaping Bunny requires recommitment. Now, some name brand items we might have in our homes that are on Leaping Bunny's list. Clorox, Lysol, 409, Windex, Raid, Johnson & Johnson, Off, Bic, Aveeno, Airwick, Dawn, and the list goes on and on. Now, I could not find any information on how these companies test the animals, but my extremely overactive imagination can only guess what they do to those poor babies. Why would Bic need to test on animals? Where does Clorox and 409 put their products? In their eyes or skin? Do they make them ingest it or inhale it? This is truly barbaric, and I urge every listener to go get the complete list of companies and boycott them. By switching to alternative products, you'll not only help end animal testing, but you'll also get healthier products.
Is there a logo that is associated with cruelty-free?
Oh, definitely. That's why you need to go to the website and look at both labels. Leaping Bunny has a rabbit kind of leaping in the air with a lion and a star. But you have, it's hard to describe, so you have to go look at the website.
Okay, so leapingbunny.org has this logo that you need to go pay attention to. Now, are there other ways we can help?
You can educate your family. Donate to places that have rescued Ridgeland Beagles like Big Dog Ranch Rescue and Beagle Freedom Project. Write to your local and federal representatives, including members of Congress, and contact agencies like the Environmental Protection Agency, National Institute of Health, and the Food and Drug Administration, which are all involved in animal research policies.
Wow. So I have a video that was produced by Beagle Freedom Project, and this is from the dog's perspective. Now, I know this is melodramatic, but it does reinforce Genesis 1:26. We need to be better stewards of all things we have dominion over.
Some people think dogs can't remember, but I can. I remember the needles, the gas masks, the sounds of death. I was a laboratory test subject. I was known as Federal ID number 1547609. I spent my entire life in a cage, testing products for humans. All I knew was that people meant pain. All I felt was cold metal under my feet. Until the day my life changed forever.
Let's get you out of here.
Beagle Freedom Project came and set me free. They showed me the sun and let me touch grass for the first time. And I wasn't the only one. Watching other dogs play, I saw freedom.
No more cages. Welcome to your new life.
And then Beagle Freedom Project introduced me to some new people.
This is Walter.
Hi, Walter.
Who took me home.
Come on, play. Come play.
I didn't trust people yet.
It's okay, buddy. Take your time.
But they weren't like the others. And eventually, I gave them a chance.
Hey,
here you go.
Then I felt love for the first time.
I love you, Walter.
Beagle Freedom Project gave me a family. And they're giving us hope.
It's called the Beagle Freedom Bill.
Nevada becomes the second state to pass a new law about animal testing.
The governor today proclaiming Beagle Freedom Project Day.
Across the country, Beagle Freedom Project is giving thousands like me their first steps on grass. Their first touch from a loving hand. Their first taste of freedom. This is Beagle Freedom Project.
Well, that's going to take care of our program this week. Leslie, thank you for bringing this to our attention and being a guest on Power of Prophecy.
Thank you. And thank you for listening. And remember, put your money where your heart is. God bless.
Okay, that's going to take care of this week's program. My guest has been Leslie Barrett. We want to thank you for tuning in and giving us an hour of your time. We greatly appreciate it. And as always, I pray you will tune in again next week at this same time. Tune in and discover the power of prophecy.